The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom. From comics and video games to science and technology, if it's geeky, we've got it covered. Hi, I'm Cap.
I'm John.
And I'm Jess.
And this is a Nerdy Show microsode. That's where we talk about what you want us to talk about for 15 minutes or more. In this case, the topic is Mars One, presented to you by Kevin Wise. Now, Mars One is an interesting thing. We'll get into exactly what it is, but essentially it's one of many programs these days to get humans on Mars. And we have a lot of such programs. For example, NASA's Journey to Mars program or the recently announced SpaceX plans to go to Mars. So we're going to actually be talking about all of those things.
In 15 minutes, start the timer. Go.
Really, in this case, for as long as we need to have the conversation in full. So I guess to kick it off, Mars One, if you've heard of it before, it's probably because when they first debuted in 2012, it was with the shocking and preposterous announcement that it would not be a program to not only send people to Mars for the first time, but it was also to be televised as a reality television show.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that aspect of that one.
How could you forget that?
Well, because I think then going to Mars became more substantial, and it became like more of a like, okay, well, now NASA has a plan. And so it was like, okay, now we don't need like the survivor like piece to like make people think going to Mars is cool anymore. But yeah, I did completely forget about that. selective memory I wanted to forget.
Well, that's usually the first thing that comes under scrutiny when people scrutinize Mars One. It's a very controversial program. The idea being that it had open applications and they would cull down a list of candidates and send the first humans to Mars, two men, two women. They would colonize Mars and then have progressive like increases in the colony footprint effectively until it was a self-sustaining entity there. And then
self-sustaining being, kind of crazy since I think the numbers that they ultimately wanted to get to was 20 people. So that's like nothing, nowhere near enough to sustain anything. I mean, the entire plan was just nuts. And I mean, like, talking about scrutiny, they were planning on funding it based on private investment as well as the idea of this reality TV show, but that inherently doesn't make any damn sense at all. I mean, you know, you have the viewership die off, and then you have no funding, and it wouldn't have funded it anyway. They estimated, what, like $60 billion to get there? The whole thing, like, it's not financially a sound investment for anybody because you'd never make back your money. You'd barely be able to break even. Who's developing all the technology for that? You know, they keep sort of fingering SpaceX like, oh, yeah, these guys, we're just going to take their capsule. You know, we're going to go do this thing. But what about all the other systems that they would need and the extra parts that they would need to bring along with them? And, you know, in other words, like there is a hell of a lot of stuff going into a self-sustaining colony.
It wasn't $60 billion, by the way. It was just $6 billion. But even
God, that's even stupider. You know, the NASA one was something like $100 billion in 2009 was what they thought it would cost.
Yeah, that's NASA's Journey to Mars program, which was originally outlined in 2010 and is still very active. The plan that in short, because there's not too much to say on that at the moment, but the plan is to send a robotic mission to capture and redirect an asteroid to orbit the moon, where astronauts would explore it by 2025, and then using that as well as systems currently being tested on the International Space Station, they would take all that information and sometime in the 2030s have a manned mission to Mars.
That sounds reasonable, right? I mean, I think even with all of these like announcements or all of these plans, it seems so fantastical still to me. And it seems like, and I know that there's a lot of science behind what Elon is doing, but I think there's just so much more that we need to learn about, you know, the effects of space travel on humans and the effect of what that radiation will look like and you know, what they're seeing on the surface that we could really be studying like closer to the planet instead of just being like, we're just going to go there and we're going to see what happens. It's just a little more, sounds more insane to me.
Yeah, well, especially when you combine it with the possibility of it being televised, because basically as soon as they announced that and all the real science started coming out of like, wait, but there's insurmountable things that you have to achieve before you can actually successfully do this. And it's already extremely risky. You're essentially announcing a television show where people are going to die.
Yep.
And I mean,
if they even make it there in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's something that they've acknowledged and accepted, that's space travel for you. So that's good that they have, you know, their head is not in the clouds in regards to that. But it did seem a little preposterous. Now, there's actually a book that just came out this year from Mars One. It's called Mars One, Humanity's Next Great Adventure Inside the First Human Settlement on Mars. You know, out of the 18 people who reviewed it on Amazon, it's reviewing pretty well. It's got 4 stars. But
so they wrote fanfic about themselves?
Well, you know, kind of. They have very credible people who wrote this. There's some people who, for some reason, believe in the project. There's an MD with an expertise in developing physiological and psychological countermeasures to combat the negative effects of long-duration spaceflight. There's a doctor who's a neurophysicist who works on Mir Skylab and now works for the ESA. And there's a professor of applied human sciences at Concordia University in Montreal. But here's a 1-star review, and I think this 1-star review sums up the problems with Mars One in a nutshell. It's called Delusional in the Extreme by Beyond Human.
Oh wait, there's more? You could just say that sentence and I think.
I mean that's true, but the review goes on. That's just the title. Delusional. What can I say? Cataracts, vision impairment and intracranial pressure, bone loss, osteocraniosis. Wait, osteoradionecrosis, early onset Alzheimer's, muscle atrophy, single strand and double strand breaks, gene mutations, radiation sickness, etc., etc. And what about entry, descent, and landing? No mention of how Mars One will resolve any of these problems. This is a work of fiction and badly written at that. If you believed humans and dinosaurs once roamed the Earth at the same time, then this book is for you.
I think that really does truly sum it up. I mean, like, there literally nothing about the project seems to make any damn sense. And in fact, it only really makes any sense within reference of whatever the hell Elon, you know, comes up with. I mean, his plan is at least fairly somewhat serviceable, you know, like in comparison. He builds rockets and he has done things that have been surprisingly forward, let's say. I mean, nobody in the industry thought that a reusable rocket was even possible, and he's at least managed to land them, so, you know.
True. I mean, but what's also insane is, like, Mars One is still a thing. It's still happening. Like, people are still signing up to this. So, like, if you go to their website, now, granted, this was still July of this year, so it was still a few months ago, but there was 2 new candidates that were added to their astronaut selection process to replace other candidates that left for, you know, personal reasons, which perhaps they came to their senses and realized that this was ridiculous. But like, there's still people signing up for this. Like, they're still like, yep, I'm on board. Let's do this.
Well, not only are there people signing up for this, but of the ones that I've actually like looked into, they're good people. They're good, smart, intelligent people who we might actually want to be there. It's not just like random dudes like, yep, want to die on Mars. Ain't got a problem with that. Ain't nothing left for me here. For example, I found an article on a website called Runway Girl Network, which is about women in aeronautics.
I see what they did there.
And there's a whole piece dedicated to Laura Smith Velasquez. She's a human factors and systems engineer at Rockwell Collins Advanced Technology Center. And for 14 years, she's been a pilot working in the aviation and aerospace sector. They have this interview with her. It's part one. Part two is going to be up soon. I'll link to it on this episode's page. She sounds great. She sounds like exactly the kind of person you would want to be an astronaut and an ambassador of Earth for what it's worth, out there doing great things. She grew up watching Nova and Star Trek, reading Anne McCaffrey. Her grandma built airplanes, and she's a Cherokee who grew up in Michigan, poor, and fought her way up to this point of prevalence. Like, she sounds like an awesome person. And she's one of who they call the Mars 100 semifinalists, whittling down to ultimately like the handful of people who would be Mars One's like final group.
Yeah, they're having them do like simulation things too, right? Where like they're having them be in isolation for a given amount of time and seeing if they can handle like the psychological strain of such a journey.
Yeah.
That was the original plan, but they actually haven't done any of that stuff. Like they were supposed to actually do reality TV show stuff now, but they still can't get through even the basic, you know, contract stuff. The company that they had on board backed out. You know, so instead they completed just like basically Skype interviews and haven't done any real true vetting of any of them. But the original plan was basically to have like the 100 show up, form teams, 9 days, I think it was, in isolation. You know, then they would go on to like another set of challenges, etc. There would be eliminations. The winning team wouldn't eliminate anybody off their team. The other ones would have people, you know, lost and replaced and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
And it was way more reality show style. And when it was originally pitched, they actually haven't gotten to if you go to Wikipedia, they have it all kind of laid out pretty easy to read there. They had a number of different phases. They actually haven't got to the isolation phase yet. There was this version that was going to have everybody compete and they were going to be broadcasting the show internationally and people in different regions would vote for the people regions.
Because that's exactly what you want.
Jesus.
and now here's the thing about the reality TV show thing, which I didn't realize until researching this episode, is that it was really just supposed to be a potential means of funding the project. There's a quote from one of them, the founders, that said, "Mars One's goal is not to send humans to Mars in 2027 with a $6 billion budget and 14 launches. Our goal is to send humans to Mars, period." That was just simply a hypothetical avenue of revenue and hypothetical dates and budgets and so on that made sense. So is it a pipe dream still? Yeah, it's probably a pipe dream still, at least for them. You know, for like Elon Musk.
Well, and that winds up being the thing, though. Then what are they even, you know, if they are not their plan?
Well, they still have a plan of some kind because they are funding research for growing vegetables on Martian soil. And you can help fund this research yourself by giving to their crowdfunding campaign.
Yeah, they've been doing a lot of crowdfunding lately. That's been their most recent thing. They have donations on their website. And they've gotten about a little over $900,000 in donations alone. That's from normal people. That's not actual investors. Those numbers have been kept private, how much has been privately invested in them. Just over $300,000 came from an Indiegogo campaign, which was set up to fund their initial demonstration mission, which was scheduled for 2018, and they were looking for $400,000. They came up about $100,000 shy on Indiegogo. Either way, it's not how you want to fund a mission to Mars.
Yeah.
No, not even at all.
I'd really just like to understand, like that, like Cap, the kick-ass woman that you were talking about before, like what makes you think that this is a good idea? Like why? I'd really like to understand. I'd love to understand that psychology.
I would love to know that too. And actually, it's a two-part interview. So the part talking about her being in the Mars One project actually hasn't been published as of this recording. So I don't know what her reasoning is yet.
I mean, I'm guessing that the basic reasoning comes down to, I am very much so for a multi-planet lifestyle, and so even if this is not going to work out, I know that it's never going to actually, you know, happen. So I'm still going to be sort of supportive, like showing that there is actually people that are willing to go and take that leap. Yeah. That's my best thing. Like, it's sort of a confidence vote, not in Mars One, but in multi-planet.
That's fair. Maybe she'll hop over to SpaceX now.
Well, right. But maybe Mars One would hop over to SpaceX, so to speak. I mean, they'd already included them in the plan, but if they actually get the price down, they could always do some sort of a weird thing where it's like, oh, well, $200,000 a person, you say. I mean, of course, that's their ultimate goal, so it'd be more than that. I guess my point is, they might actually be able to fund the people to go over on one of the SpaceX things and then, you know, pick up the funding to do their weird little show. But at this point, you got to ask yourself, like, why do they exist in the first place? If, you know, they don't care how they get people to Mars, then do they care if they get people to Mars at all? Or if SpaceX is like, okay, well, whatever.
something to emphasize here is that what John was talking about with the SpaceX, then with Mars One using SpaceX, is before SpaceX announced their own Mars colony plans, Mars One had plans to use SpaceX's materials as part of their launch program. So,
still kind of funny, really, because they had barely even, I mean, it was only recognized recently that they had actually had any contact with SpaceX whatsoever. So, you know, kind of a huge part of the whole plan that they hadn't even engaged with.
And maybe it's just revisionist history, but because obviously the whole thing about the reality show was promoted quite a bit, but and it was popular with approximately no one. but it does appear that the reality show was never the core agenda of Mars One. It was simply some entrepreneurs, I assume folks with a ton of money and some fanciful ideas, who said, yeah, let's do this and let's be the first to do it. Why wouldn't people want to invest in, like, people and companies want to invest in the possibility of getting people to Mars? And also, they're from the Netherlands, and I haven't been able to find, like, a good resource for this, but I did read that the Netherlands is kind of the epicenter of reality television. They created Big Brother.
Oh my God.
So this is like their bag. The company that they had a contract with briefly, an exclusive contract, was Darlo Smithson Productions, and they are the present owners of Big Brother. They were, quote, unable to reach an agreement on the details of the contract and therefore dissolved that. And presently there's no other television contracts in play for Mars One. One can only assume that this, like, extreme voyeurism project came out of this, I guess, the mindset of the Netherlands. I don't know. We have some listeners from the Netherlands. If you guys can, like, confirm or deny your country's obsession with reality television, you know, let us know. I would like, however, to formally attribute the creation of reality television to Andy Warhol, who really conceived of the Big Brother project in general, though no one seems to credit him for it. But if you go to the Warhol Museum in Pittsburgh, they got it all laid out for you. So really, really what we're looking towards now is NASA and SpaceX. And then there's a possibility that Mars One and their investment and whatever infrastructure they have there, if they do in fact have anything of worth within their company, could somehow become a part of someone else's private space enterprise.
I mean, I guess it seems reasonable that if they are researching how to grow crops on Mars and they're making headway in that regard. I just read the one press release on it, but that seems like that's relatively helpful information to be sharing with others. But I don't know. I mean, there's just so much. There's so much that has to be done more than just growing crops. Like, there's, digging underground. Like, they're saying you need to be at least 30 feet underground with your main dwelling areas to protect yourself from the cosmic radiation. And
you read the highlights from the AMA?
I went through a few of them.
You guys are talking about Elon Musk's AMA, right?
Right,
yeah. That
yeah,
was like today.
Yeah, no, he did it Sunday, so October 23rd.
All
the articles are today. But basically, yeah, he was just talking a little bit more about his transportation system and kind of what he was planning, and he went into, like, they're going to use the Raptor engines that they have that are currently under development and have a spacecraft that's designed to carry, like, 100 people to the surface of Mars. And then return to Earth. So returning to Earth is now on the table, which is good, because I think that makes a lot of sense. You'd want people to be on the surface, and you then probably want them to return to Earth so you can study them and be like, how is your body reacting? Have we taken 25 years off your life? Like, what's this taking a toll on?
Well, and twice as much if you had to take the whole, you know, return trip.
Right, return trip, right?
But back to your subterranean layers.
Yeah, somebody call Vault Tech. That sounds like a job for Vault Tech.
Yeah. Better living underground.
That's actually the first I've heard of that.
Really?
Yeah,
I mean, you pretty much have to.
Well, because I'll tell you what, that's not that's not what Mars One has been peddling. Mars One has this adorable picture of this, like, series of pods that are definitely on the surface with a little solar farm in front. And then it looks like they've kind of built into a rocky surface, but it's a small rocky surface. And for a donation of $50, you can get a little model of that in a beautiful glass brick.
Aww. It's a perfect Christmas gift for the upcoming holidays, guys.
Because seriously, like, Elon actually said that, you know, oh yes, well, we'll also need to send over some tunneling drones.
That's great.
I mean, as part of the package. So yeah, no, he's got it all figured out, apparently. Although I guess this is kind of the point, though. Who's making these tunneling drones? Who's testing these tunneling drones? And like, that's just a tiny part of all the horrible amounts of infrastructure you need to actually run a colony.
But
yeah, know? I mean, you like there. So what his plan is to send one, the first Dragon rocket is supposed to go in 2018, right? As like an unmanned mission to just prove we can get there, I suppose.
Was it that soon?
I think so.
They got that big, giant, massive tank that they've been building, but like, that still seems pretty forward.
Yeah, starting as 2018.
Yeah, I'm guessing that the as soon as is going to be like 2020, but you know, hey, whatever.
We'll see.
Well, how? What was the as soon as? Like, what was the proposed first thing?
The first thing was that it has planned or it's aiming to launch one of the Unscrew Dragon capsules toward Mars in May 2018. To kind of like test the technologies to see if what they're developing will actually get them there.
That seems like they're already really well on their way to that. That seems fine.
Yeah. But it's I guess one of them to test is their supersonic retro propulsion to see that if it's coming, you know, into the atmosphere faster than basically the speed of sound, the capsule will then instead use its thrusters rather than like a parachute to slow down in order to land. So that, I guess, is one of their biggest...
Parachutes, of course, don't really work on Mars that well.
Right. Yeah, there's not a whole lot of wind resistance there to pick up. But yeah, so that's what they want to test first.
Huh.
I'm amazed that that whole NASA bouncy ball thing actually worked.
What was that?
Oh, no, I mean, it basically is exactly what it sounds like. It was like inflatable balloons.
Oh yeah.
what is it? I don't know at all.
That was how they that's how they dropped like one of their landers, was literally in like a giant cushion of balloons, basically like a giant blow up ball, and it just bounced off. I forgot what the height was. It was something like, you know, 40 meters or something. It bounced. It's crazy.
That sounds pretty
rad.
And
then eventually it rolled to a stop.
Well, something that has kind of been touched on here, though, maybe inadvertently, is like there's been this question of how are people going to, you know, do these big feats and so on. But what's great about this is that because governments and private companies are asking these questions now, then we're going to find answers. It's the same thing as the initial space race. From that, we developed like a myriad technologies that have changed our very way of life, though so subtly many people don't realize it. And that's created new industries and avenues for revenue to fund future projects. It's really kind of interesting because it's hard to pin down, but the means to fund missions to Mars might actually be in the traveling to Mars. Like it might actually be like a fully inclusive ecosystem of funding to make this thing happen. I read this article that I'll link to on this episode's page called "Is There a Business Case for Mars?" On the website The Space Review, and the core question was, you know, like, what will the funding mechanisms be? How will the many technical and physiological challenges be overcome? And the sort of conclusion was that it's unlikely that in the near term any company attempting to mount independent initial Mars missions would make a profit unless these missions were funded at least in part, if not substantially, by governments. However, there are near-term business opportunities in life support, agriculture, radiation shielding, energy, in-situ resource utilization, and filtration, and that's just to name a few, of things that could be, they'd have massive, like, in developing them for Mars, they would have massive implications here on Earth.
Interesting.
Especially with the deteriorating environmental conditions, am I right?
Yeah. You know, hurling towards an extinction level event. I guess one of the things that I would hope that would never happen, and it probably won't, but like, as we get closer and closer to like the point of no return, assuming we're not already there in terms of climate change, like, hopefully like our solution isn't just like, let's go, like, let's just move the human race to Mars. Cause like there's going to be a lot that we still need Earth for, right? We can't just be like, well, we totally screwed this planet. So let's just escape plan, guys. Like, there's so much we don't know about living on another planet or bringing an entire species to another planet that we're still gonna need Earth, guys.
I can only imagine that it would always make more sense to salvage Earth, you know, yeah. Inherently. I mean, Mars is way beyond Earth when it comes down to, you know, inhospitable environment. So, I mean, like, you know, I mean, like, solar isn't, it's so much further out. Solar isn't as viable a resource. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, the whole thing is basically a hazardous environment. But as for the other mess, profitability, I mean, you probably could get a lot of stuff from technologies, but I mean, if you wound up actually going to an asteroid and pulling one of those, you would have immediate resource value, you know? And so, like, I guess what I'm saying is I'm sort of seeing like two different angles here. One, going to Mars, setting up a colony, but then the other is asteroids in general. Wow, look at all this gold.
Or the moon, even. We could go to the moon, mine a bunch of minerals off the moon.
Yeah, helium-3, just like in the film Moon, which was, yeah. You know, a pretty... It was a hard science fiction. That was all true. All of it.
Based on a true story.
Yeah.
Well, but wasn't it implying that there was actually fusion then on Earth?
I guess so. Well, I guess we'll find out in Duncan Jones's follow-up to Moon coming in a year or two.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He used all that Warcraft money to film a new independent film.
Oh, God.
That's why you take the blockbuster projects, kids, to make your crazy independent dreams a reality.
I think that
doesn't sound too bad, actually.
I feel like that's really actually the value of Musk's system, though, is that, I mean, technically you could go to the asteroids as well as you could go to Mars. Except, you know, once again, you freaking pull in a gold nugget that weighs a ton and you've already disrupted, like, the economy practically.
Yeah.
But that is why NASA's... program is surprisingly compelling, because it starts with harnessing an asteroid and putting it in orbit around the moon, and that sounds like they're just setting up the skeleton for a whole asteroid harvesting industry based on our nearest object, you know. So if we establish, you know, a nice little commuter system to the moon of us having people go out there, harvest minerals and so on, take them back to Earth, maybe start a utopian society that doesn't involve, you know, with the universal standard income and stuff like that. Yeah. Maybe, you know, why not?
Wait, guys, I was just thinking we can tie this back into our earlier discussions about AI and what are your like society is going to look like when, you know, the majority of the jobs are being able to be done by machines. This is where we get all the money to support our sort of utopian lifestyle.
There you
Working
go.
Towards a utopia as opposed to a dystopia is inherently a good idea.
Yeah.
Science fact.
Now, where's that book? I want the utopian future books.
Yeah. Don't we all?
I guess they don't sell as well. They're not.
No,
as...
they kind of exist. The final installment of Arthur C. Clarke's Space Odyssey trilogy it's got drama in it, but it's kind of like has a lack of conflict almost because it's in a relatively utopian society.
It could still be conflict, but it could just be like good conflict.
Yeah, just not your standard issue.
Too much
conflict.
Funds to do all this.
There are so many things I could do today. Which
we are going to build a solid gold spaceship and then send that to Mars instead.
So you guys have mentioned Elon Musk a lot, which I actually noted both you guys refer to him as Elon. It's cool that you're on a first name basis with him. Could you introduce
me? Now.
Right?
We go way back.
he has this great quote, which is, "I want to die on Mars, just not on impact." And we haven't really laid out his big Mars plan. And there's actually a very long video about explaining all of it, which I unfortunately haven't watched. But I know John at least has. So I was wondering if
did.
Yeah, let's talk about exactly what the SpaceX plan is. We've already mentioned it a little bit, but what is it in full?
Dreamy.
Okay, what else?
He, like, you know, I mean, it's one of those things. Once again, like, they already have, you know, rockets. They already do that. It's not like, oh, it'd be really great if we could build rockets. I mean, he's talking about building something that's larger than the Saturn V, which, of course, was the moon rocket. I mean, we haven't built anything that big since the moon. We haven't gone. We haven't done anything worthwhile since then. The thing's efficiency is crazy high. I mean, it's like 5 or 6 times the overall efficiency of the Saturn V. We're talking about launching the largest payloads into space ever. I mean, it's just nutty. The actual, I mean, in other words, what he is ultimately proposing is something that, for the first time ever, truly deserves the name of spaceship. The size of the crew area alone ultimately being able to hold 100 individual people plus all the supplies that they need on Mars and shooting that over in one shot.
If it was anybody else, we'd say he was out of his mind.
He might still be out of his mind, but like, you know, like what you said, if it was anybody else, right?
Yeah, I mean, actually, what I was reading an interview with Kim Stanley Robinson about this whole Elon's whole plan to go to Mars. And for those that don't know, he wrote a Mars trilogy in the 90s called Red Mars, Green Mars, and Blue Mars. And he said, quote, "Musk's plan is sort of the 1920s science fiction cliche of the boy who builds a rocket to the moon in his backyard." And then it just goes through in the interview, just talking about his entire plan and just how strange it is. Because again, that same point of like, we haven't done anything really since we went to the moon. And there are still some that argue we never went to the moon. So, and he argues, he's like, you know, Mars will never be a single person or a single company effort. It has to be multinational and it has to take a lot of money and a lot of years. Because there's just so much. It's not like you do have to build this rocket that can carry 100 people and all of the supplies, and maybe you send some beforehand, and you're probably actually going to have to send some other rockets to start mining and getting fuel for your return trip. But that's just the first step. But then you have to actually be there and survive and set everything up and deal with now who owns Mars and what does our space treaties look like? Is this the United States part of Mars? Is this the Russian part of Mars? Like, there's a whole series of things that really need to happen. You can't just be like, I'm Elon Musk, I own SpaceX, and this is now, Mars is now owned by SpaceX because I got here first. Done. Okay, goodbye.
He could make a compelling case for that, though.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it really is like, well, where are the Martian factories? How are you going to develop technology on Mars? Like, I mean, you don't realize how much infrastructure is necessary for any normal product in your home until you go to Mars, right?
Like a sewage system.
Yeah, like, now we need to be able to make a PVC pipe or lead pipe or something. We have to be able to mine the resources, process the resources, fabricate them into probably, you know, base metals to be deployed, however, and then finally make the product off of it. Each one of those things requires factories to build stuff, to build stuff, to build stuff across the board. And then you also need energy to, you know, do all that. In addition to that, you know, we have some idea of where resources are on Mars, but obviously without a proper on-the-ground geological survey, who knows, you know? Like, unless there's just gold sitting on the surface, like, yep, here's a gold field. Now we're good for, you know, our circuit boards forever.
The coming age of automation seems like, you know, the Mars exploration and colonization programs, whoever is responsible for it, like, ultimately, it should be inherently a part of that. Like, we need to do a ton of preliminary work with drones first and foremost before we achieve the aspirational goal of sending people there.
But therein lies the problem, of course, because I mean, you know, you still have to have all these, you know, robots then, right? And then you wind up with the time delay. And so then it winds up being like, okay, well, we can't really remote control them from here and have them do anything truly meaningful. So instead, you know, you would need to give them autonomy. Actually, now that I think about it, one of them, was that a Mars One thing? One of them was actually saying, oh, and then we just have the autonomous robot go and set up shop. I think it was Mars One. Anyway.
I can't imagine Mr. Musk, since his cat pointed out I'm not on a first name basis with Elon.
I mean, but, you could be. I don't know that.
Yeah. I run into him in the valley all the time. No. as Mr. Musk pointed out, or that doesn't sound like something he would say.
Lord Admiral Musk.
Yeah.
First president Supreme of Mars, Elon
commander
Musk.
Commander of Mars.
Musk. Martian Musk. Crazy Martian Musk.
Old man Musk out there in them red hills.
Yep. But yeah. I mean, but I think also in terms of it is a long effort, and it's going to take a lot of, you know, iterations to get to this point. And this is something that also was pointed out in the Kim Stanley Robinson interview, where we tend to lose interest in things. We went to the moon and we were like, did it. Cool. Done. Like, people will summit it Everest. And now, you know, it's like a tourist thing. Like, now everybody does it. Like, it's
now we have to do trash cleanups every Wednesday.
Right. And now, so what is to say, like, we don't get to Mars and people are like, cool, we did it. Everybody celebrates. Yay. And then we're like, well, okay, now what? I don't really care anymore. So
I think that's really what's great, though, about the whole asteroid thing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you actually brought back a solid platinum asteroid, you would destroy the world's economy.
Like, yeah, ain't nobody can do nothing with those moon rocks.
I mean, it'd be like, oh, we figured out how to make aluminum. It no longer costs more than gold. It's worthless. Which is also a beautiful thing, because that means massive abundance of a really, really cool resource. But, I mean, I'm just saying, like, asteroids.
I feel like the quest to colonize Mars could potentially be the gift that keeps on giving, because Mars One did actually capture people's imagination, as flawed as it was.
Yeah.
And maybe
that was always the point, I guess, right? Just shock value.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they wanted to make a splash, right? So they made a hell of a splash and then couldn't back it up with anything, because if they're selecting people like the woman I mentioned, you know, they could potentially be drumming up a lot of interest in their program if they, you know, if countless scientific minds didn't publicly out them as being 100% bullshit. I mean, their aspirations might be pure, but the reality of what they were trying to do is just so flimsy. But as far as like the prospect of colonizing Mars, you're right. There are so many systems involved in what that would be. There's no way it wouldn't be an ongoing quest that involves a legitimate profit margin, legitimate human risk, and I feel like enough of a challenge that it could stimulate people's imagination without what happened with the space shuttle program, you know, happening, where people like, where they're like, we did it, and now we've done it so much that it's not interesting anymore.
Yep.
Well, to be fair, the space shuttle was always a joke anyway. I mean, that was never the plan of the space shuttle. It was never the purpose. It was always like the space shuttle was just one tiny part of Von Braun's dream to go to Mars in the first place. And that was like, whoa, we can't just completely back off from space. So let's do the cheapest thing. What is that? You know, I set up a geosynchronous satellite orbit, whatever. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, and this is, I think it's something really beautiful and fascinating, is that people were, during the space race, people were dreaming big. They were dreaming huge. Mm. And as soon as we made that first initial milestone, the bigger dreams were so legitimately far off. Because even if could we be on Mars right now with people there doing stuff if we'd worked towards that whole time as a, you know, a collective of governments? Probably. We probably could. But it would have been like recently. It was still like all the technology we needed, like not even, you know, industry pushing forward on things like cell phones and so on. It's started moving very quickly now, but it took us 20 years for it to get to that point of accelerating returns. So the technology to get to Mars, it would have been a challenge to be in our grasp to begin with. And people would have had to have, governments and agencies would have had to have made, I don't know, they would have to have gone above and beyond to continually stimulate the public's interest on the quest towards Mars. Like establishing a moon base, maybe, I don't know. But first you have to harness asteroids to make that worthwhile.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. I mean, if you think about it, even just what, like 3 years ago, NASA was just getting defunded left and right. And just who knew? Like, I know I was legitimately worried that maybe NASA just won't be an organization anymore because people just don't even seem to care. But now I think that there has been such a revival in interest that I don't necessarily even worry about it. Like President Barack Obama just had an op-ed in CNN where he was talking about how important Mars is now. So I think you could be onto something there, Cap. Dreaming big.
I mean, that's what it takes, right? We have to hold on to what we have because we're in a climate now where Cosmos return to television. Neil deGrasse Tyson is like so well known as a science personality that, you know, people are getting tickets to see him do his thing live, to speak live. I'm going to see him when he comes to Orlando next time. Like that's a thing people are doing and getting excited.
Bill Nye's coming back and he's talking about the dangers of climate change.
It's become a bit of an industry again, being science positive. And in a large way, it's because it's competing against hopefully a ruthless minority of people who are like anti-science. But we live in a really confusing time right now. None of us won't argue that. But it's got to the point where even business people who they could even be climate change deniers will see the business opportunities in space. And through that capitalistic motivation, it's okay to be excited about space again. And those opportunities, I mean, look, it's all part of a bigger problem. We have so many different ecosystems that we exist in. The problem with capitalism is that how much is enough? It's never enough. They always try for more. Even when you could be a company doing a really good job making fine products, then you go public, you sell yourselves out, your quality deteriorates, and all this. It's a cycle we hear over and over again. It's awful. Like ingenuity and innovation is rewarded by people cashing out, selling out, and quality dipping off or whatever. Everything stagnates, and at the end of the day, the shareholders just want more. The only way to get more, the only way for the demon of capitalism to even have a hope of continuing this voracious cycle of gluttony is to go off of Earth because we're done here, you know?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, history repeats itself, right? So we're getting into another tenuous, like, Cold War relationship with Russia. We can have another great space race. Conditions are swirling.
Yeah. And, you know, we all hope for the best. I can see many ways that this, you know, that we can have all of this let's say friendly international competition without it getting ugly again. But we're in a very difficult place in time, which is why we're grateful to all you fine people listening to us that like, you know, we're all part of our own ecosystem, so to speak, of nerds who care about stuff, if you want to like boil it down. And I did forget earlier in the discussion, because it's been such a heated discussion, to tap into this and to thank all of you for supporting Nerdy Show and suggesting that if you go to patreon.com/nerdyshow, you can help fund us because crowdfunding is, you know, it didn't really work out for Mars One. When you have, say, an achievable goal like we have.
I like think we're a little bit more legitimate than Mars One.
Yeah.
Also, yes.
But if you guys want us to dream big, we can come up with some ridiculous ideas if that's what you want too.
Well, I mean, we do, you know, to be devil's advocate, we do in our own small scale way dream big, like being able to do Nerdy Show full time, which is one of our forthcoming goals.
Right, but it's also achievable.
Yes.
And it, you know, we have steps that will actually get us there. I was more talking about like if you just want us to pull out, we will bring magic to, I don't know, it's just something ridiculous that doesn't seem achievable, but sounds sexy. I'll work on it. I'm not a PR person.
Well, and whatever it is, we don't need $100 billion to do it.
Yeah. It's a bargain. Anyway.
So, a bargain at any price.
Go to nerdyshow.com/support and learn all the ways that you can help fund our achievable dreams. Speaking of achievable dreams, this coming week is the launch of Lightning Dogs, the official podcast, We said it was going to come out sometime in Dogtober, and at the very least by Halloween. So looks like we've been working down to the wire, and it's definitely going to be Monday, October 31st. So look forward to that. What it is, in a nutshell, is a crazy idea we came up with on an episode of Nerdy Show 3 years ago that snowballed into a really good idea about a animated series inspired by all the greatest action adventure sci-fi animation and films from the late 80s and early 90s. And we're taking it all the way. We want it to be an animated television series, and that is legitimately a pipe dream, but we have the steps to do it all laid out. It's a journey that we're taking you guys along with us. It's the podcast itself is our entire journey from the moment of the show's conception chronicled all the way to what we hope to be the inevitable conclusion of this someday being an animated television series. So,
and all the technology is already completely proven.
Yeah, the question remains of, can three nerds outside of the animation industry break into the animation industry and make a dream a reality? That's the big question here.
Sounds like a good reality show podcast, Cap.
Yeah, well, you just need to do a reality show.
I think we have these fantastic elements.
The company will try to introduce arbitrary, random stressors, but whatever.
I can send you random stress emails if you want.
Oh, I have enough of those, thank you.
There's a horrible cataclysm about to happen.
But yeah, so we've recorded every single moment of the show from our accidental conceiving of the idea throughout all of our planning process, and we'll continue to do so. And it starts on Monday. We'll have all of our original episodes, which were released as a part of Nerdy Show, re-edited into a new format, along with a new episode, and the new episodes coming out every other week. Until we hit a Patreon goal, whereby we'll be able to do it weekly. Achievable dreams!
Yay!
Hashtag makes more sense than Mars One, or probably a better...
I think this should be our new... I think this should be our new tagline. Achievable dreams. Hashtag achievable dreams.
So,
tell us what your achievable dreams are.
Yeah,
on Twitter.
Yeah, with using hashtag achievable dreams.
that's what they say on the television, right?
Yeah, they try to motivate people using hashtags. Well, we do too. Hashtag Hal Noise, hashtag pound sign.
Metrics.
So that's probably about it for the Martian stuff. We've said some things. We've talked some stuff.
Said some sciencey words.
Yeah. Thanks to Kevin Wise for shaking off the SciTech cobwebs. It's been a while since we've done an all SciTech episode of Nerdy Show. And look forward to new episodes of Nerdy Show every single week. Next week, it'll be our usual potpourri of nerd subjects. And then after that, something probably a bit more specific. Still trying to do that all Fallout episode, but I got to finish Nuka World. I've been too busy.
You haven't finished Nuka World yet?
As soon as I finish Nuka World, John, you'll get a message, and I'll say it's time for us to record that Fallout 4 postmortem.
I don't remember anything. I have to play another 500 hours.
I haven't even started, so you're better than me, Cap.
Oh, my.
Soon, soon, soon. Anyway, taking us out is a track by Melody Sheep's Symphony of Science. This is The Case for Mars, the most appropriate track I could find in our archives at nerdy.fm.
Seems legit.
Thanks so much for listening. Bye, I'm Cap.
Bye, I'm John.
Bye, I'm Jess.
Mars is the next logical step in our space program. It's the challenge that's been staring us in the face for the past 30 years. It has water. It has carbon. It has a 24-hour day. It has geothermal energy. Mars is a place we can settle.
There is a giant rift in its surface. 5,000 kilometers long. There is a volcano as wide as Arizona.
So there's the choice in life. One either grows or one decays. Grow or die. I think we should grow.
Mars is a world of wonders.
It has canyons, river valleys, and giant ice sheets.
Mars is a world of wonders.
It shouldn't be humans to Mars in 50 years. It should be humans to Mars in 10. Muster the courage to go, or we risk the possibility of stagnation, cosmic radiation, zero gravity, Martian dust storms, back contamination. but these are dragons that we can take on.
In our time, we have sifted the sands of Mars, established a presence there, and fulfilled a century of dreams.
The Mars rovers have really captured our imaginations. They genuinely are explorers in the old-fashioned sense.
If you put out a call for volunteers from the first crew to Mars, they'd be lined up coast to coast.
Mars is a world of wonders.
It has canyons, river valleys, and giant ice sheets.
Mars is a world of wonders.
It shouldn't be humans to Mars in 50 years. It should be humans to Mars in 10.
Mars is a dry, frozen version of our home, covered in red dust and sand. At one time, in the ancient past, Mars was very similar to the condition of earlier.
There will always be people with new ideas on how humans should live together.
We now have eyes and ears on the surface.
What's left after you go is the good you left behind. You have to believe in hope. You have to believe in the future. There are more and more people coming around to the point of view that a positive future for humanity requires human expansion to space.
Mars is a world of wonders.
It has canyons, river valleys, and giant ice sheets.
Mars is a world of wonders.
It shouldn't be humans to Mars in 50 years. It should be humans to Mars in 10.
This is a world of wonders.
We're at a crossroads today. We either muster the courage to go or we risk the possibility of stagnation in the kingdom.
Thanks for listening to Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes or like and follow us on SoundCloud. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. You can also subscribe to us via iTunes and SoundCloud. Leave a comment, like and share, and follow Nerdy Show on all of your favorite social networks. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.